In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. The icon you see before you is the icon of All Saints in North America. And last year, when we had this commemoration, we already had to point out that we had recently glorified Mashka Olga of Alaska, and so there was a saint that was missing. And this year, our Synod of Bishops have undertaken the process of glorifying Father Seraphim Rose, and so soon there'll be another need to amend the icon. It might give you pause about thinking about naming a parish after All Saints of North America, because you're going to have to keep updating your patronal feast festival icon. You know, All Saints of Russia icon, I don't know what year the one that Jordanville has was painted, but I know it was before the glorification of the new martyrs, because they're depicted as not having halos. But when you have a church that's been around for 1,000 years, you have so many saints, and when you add even a great saint like Saint John of Shanghai, which was after that, it's not as obvious of an omission when you have this great multitude of saints and great saints that are listed there. But in North America, we're working on it still. We've got a ways to go, but we are continuing to add saints. But Father Seraphim Rose is a particularly important saint because he lived through the moral and intellectual decline of this country, and he saw where it was headed before most people did. I think that if you read his writings, you'll find them to be incredibly insightful and helpful. And I think that even those of us that don't struggle with the kinds of things that he struggled with need to educate ourselves about where things are heading so that we can help other people. Because there's, you know, when you're swimming in the, if you're a fish swimming in the sea, you don't realize that you're wet because you're in the sea all the time. And so it doesn't strike you as odd that you're in the sea. Well, when you're in a culture where you're surrounded by nihilism and agnosticism and all kinds of strange ideas which are foreign to people who are as old as I am and can remember when America was a little bit saner than it is now. But if you grow up at a time when everybody's crazy, it seems normal that there are so many crazy people with so many crazy ideas. Father Seraphim was born in 1934. And so that would have been during the Great Depression, but he came of age when America was really at its peak in very many respects, in terms of its confidence, because it just come through the Great Depression, then World War II, and it came out on the winning side of that war. And America had unprecedented prosperity, because unlike most of Europe and Asia, the United States was essentially unscathed from the war. There was no cities that were bombed out, no factories that needed to be rebuilt. And so for a while, if you were buying anything of quality, you were probably buying something that was made in America. And so we really reaped the benefit of all of that. And globally, we were very much on the top of our game, you could say, in terms of our influence around the world. But there were already beginning in the 1950s to be signs of a deep dissatisfaction, especially among young people. Before you had hippies, you had the beatniks, which were sort of the forerunners of the hippies. But these were people who were looking at the materialism, the prosperity, and the sort of shallow expression of Christianity which predominates America, and they were saying, this is all fake. This is not real. This is not satisfying. And so they were identifying some real problems, but their solutions were not solutions that actually were good, because they started going off into these various directions intellectually that lead one to despair, nihilism being one of them, absurdism, all kinds of intellectual modes of thought where people basically throw out truth. Father Seraphim was very much inclined to read philosophers. He was an amazing reader. Just to tell you one story to give you an idea of what an amazing reader is, if you ever looked at a volume of War and Peace, you know what a formidable tome that book is. Well, he got into a debate with a mentor, a professor, who was a Russian philologist. He was a Russian, but he was actually an Asian philologist. But they were talking about who was a better spiritual writer, Dostoevsky or Tolstoy. And they got into a very heated discussion, and Father Seraphim was saying it was obviously Dostoevsky, but this man whom he respected was so adamant that Tolstoy was a deeper writer that he thought, maybe I've missed something, you know, in Tolstoy. So he said, what book would you say would be the best place to find what you're saying about Tolstoy? And he said, War and Peace. So he went home, and in a period of about 3 days, he plowed through the book, and then he came back, knocked on his door, and he said, you're wrong. And he had the book in his hand, and he was ready to show him, you know, where. But that's amazing. He was an amazing reader, and he read everything. He was familiar with all the major and many minor philosophers, people who most of us have never heard of. But, you know, he was a Methodist by his upbringing, baptized at the age of 14, but by the time he was in college, he had become an atheist, and he was an avid reader of Nietzsche. He had learned German in high school. He was a great linguist. He had amazing language abilities, and he would read Nietzsche in the original German, and he was very consumed by him, but he began to see that the only direction that Nietzsche can lead you is in the direction of insanity or suicide. And he became very depressed. And so he was constantly struggling with this idea of God. And reflecting back upon it, he said, I probably had a firmer idea of there being a God than the average small affirming Christian, but I didn't know it. But he basically was almost daring God to reveal himself to him, because he had this sense that if God is there, obviously that's the most important thing, but he didn't know how to get into a relationship with God. And so one day he was out camping with his college friends, they were having a campfire. I don't know if they were actually spending overnight, but they were on Mount Baldy in California. And at one point, as they were debating religion, he got up and he said, may God damn me now if he is real. He basically then said, well, see, nothing happened. But he said that it was almost as if that I would have been willing to have been damned just because for one moment I would have known that God was real and experienced God. But he struggled with this. There were times when he would be weeping and asking God to leave him alone. He dabbled in various religions. He was studying Chinese philosophy. He got his degree in that, and then he went on to get a master's degree in Oriental languages. And he learned Chinese where he could speak it like a native, and there was a Chinese woman that said that if you close your eyes and heard him talk, you wouldn't know that he wasn't a native born Chinese. And that's amazing for somebody born in Southern California that he only knew European languages prior to studying Chinese. But he came under the influence of a guy by the name of Alan Watts, who was an apostate Anglican priest who promoted his select version of Buddhism and Hinduism, because basically he was trying to come up with a philosophical justification for the kind of hippie hedonism and drug use that he had fallen into himself. And so he'd take a little bit of Buddhism here, a little bit of Hinduism there. And Father Seraphim actually went down that road with him up to a certain point, but as he dug deeper, because he was not someone to dabble in something on a surface level. For him, it was always all or nothing. So when he got interested in Buddhism, he started reading Buddhist texts in the original languages. He taught himself Sanskrit, so he could read Buddhist texts in Sanskrit. And he became interested in Taoism, but he began to see this guy is fake. He's taking what he likes. He's being very selective with this stuff. And this is, when I was in high school, I read people who were like this guy. And actually, as I came to understand Buddhism and Chinese religion better, I came to see the same thing, is that these people are just sort of taking a whitewashed version of these religions and not the authentic version. So Father Seraphim wanted to find what's the real authentic thing, and he came to study under a Taoist philosopher who had studied in China under some of the great sages before the communists took over. And he began to see in Chinese philosophy what he described as being the highest philosophy that's possible by human reason and natural revelation apart from divine revelation. It had a lot of truth in it, he would say, but it didn't have the ultimate truth, because the ultimate truth is a person. But that's something that he came to realize later. But while he was getting his master's degree, he was in the San Francisco area, and he wasn't just swept along by the hippie movement. He was one of those people sweeping other people along into it, and so he got into a very hedonistic lifestyle along with his previous mentor, Alan Watts, who promoted these kinds of ideas. And he found all of this very empty, but someone introduced him to the Orthodox Church. Someone invited him to come with him to the San Francisco Cathedral. And even though it was all in Slavonic, and probably the sermon was in Slavonic, the sermon was in Russian, the announcements were in Russian, so most Americans would have came in there and they would have just said, well, I don't understand a thing. And that would have been the end of it. But here we had a linguistic nerd who then went on to study Russian and Slavonic so that he could understand this. But he saw in the Russian church something that seemed authentic. And basically what he began to see was, just like these guys taking a little bit of Buddhism and Hinduism and abstracting it into something that is palatable and marketable, that's the same kind of thing that's gone on in American Christianity, where they've taken little pieces of Christianity out of its ancient authentic form. They've marketed it, but it's fake. That was his big insight. And so it took him many years. I think the first time he went to an Orthodox church was in 1954. He struggled with it for a long time and then finally became convinced of it, but he still hesitated because he knew, if I go into this, it's all or nothing. I'm going to be given 100%. So it was only in 1962 that he finally was baptized into the Orthodox Church. Then he met St. John in 1963. I used to think that St. John was the one that... He actually was not baptized. He was received by chrismation. And I used to think that it was under St. John that happened. It was actually his predecessor by 1 year. But when he met St. John, there he found someone, here is an authentic living saint. Again, authenticity. This is what he was looking for, not something that was fake. And I'm not going to use the expression that we use today in church, excuse me. I was tempted, but I resisted the temptation. But he opened up a bookstore right down the street from the cathedral in San Francisco in 1964, and then founded St. Herman's Press in 1965 with the blessing of St. John, entered monasticism in 1968, was tonsured with the name of Seraphim in 1970, and ordained a priest in 1977. Now, he reposed at a very early age, he reposed in 1982. I can't remember the exact age that he was at that time, but he was not an old man by any stretch. But it was because he was such an ascetic that when he had pain, he would ignore it. And he wound up there was some kind of a problem that cut off the blood supply to his intestines, and it caused the tissue there to die. And so he died a very painful death, but he died a Christian death. And he died with a smile on his face. You can see pictures of this if you look online. But what does he mean to us? His translations are very important. He translated many things into English from Russian. I didn't think about it until this morning, but the very first Orthodox book I read was Father Michael Pomazansky's Orthodox Dogmatic Theology, translated by Father Seraphim Rose. But he also wrote many insightful books. And I remember reading The Soul After Death when I was a new Orthodox Christian, and when I first read it, I said, this can't be true, and I put it aside, and then about 2 years later, I picked it back up, and it made perfect sense. It explained a lot of things, but it's not something that a new convert to Christianity is likely to understand properly. Orthodoxy and the Religion of the Future was one of the most insightful books that I've ever read, because like Father Seraphim, I dabbled in the occult, Eastern mysticism, various kinds of religions, and then when I repented of all that, I started getting involved in the charismatic movement. Well, if you read this book, he helped me to tie all those loose ends, because I had different kinds of experiences that I can't say were just in my head. I mean, there were real spiritual realities, but I didn't know what to make of them until I read that book, and it helped me to put it all in perspective. There's also, you can listen to it online, but he gave a series of lectures called the Orthodox Survival Course. And unfortunately, the quality of the original recordings that were made is not great, but you can listen to people reading those lectures online for free. And I, again, incredibly insightful. His book on nihilism, incredibly insightful. The thing is, he saw where things were headed back in the 50s, and everything he said about it, when you read it today, it's 10 times more true today than it was obvious at that time. So we need to educate ourselves so that we're not allowing those around us or even ourselves to be sucked into things that are fake. We need to seek that which is authentic, and we need to try to live an authentic Christian life ourselves, like Father Seraphim Rose, because it should be all or nothing. We should give it everything we have, because if it's true, it's worth living for, it's worth dying for. And that is what is attracting people to come to Orthodoxy in such massive numbers right now, because they see increasingly how clearly things are fake around us, how clearly inauthentic the thinking is around us, and how self-destructive it is, and yet they see in Orthodoxy something that's authentic. And so what we need to do is try to be authentic Orthodox Christians so that we can help to guide them into the church. Amen.